Today's guest was featured in February 3rd, 2023, Outside Magazine article, What Carl, the Professor Stanfield, Learned by Trying to Hike the Most Miles Ever. Today, we're going to talk to Carl about that. He's going to share some of those experiences. Carl, the Professor, welcome to Papa Bear Hikes.
Thanks. It's good to be here. I'm excited to chat today.
Carl, let's start by telling us a little about yourself before we dive into this incredible feat that you attempted in 2022. Tell us a little about who you are.
Sure. Yeah. So I slowly got into the outdoors and backpacking as I was growing up. I grew up in East Tennessee, just outside the Smoky Mountains, and got involved with the outdoors by doing summer camp kind of stuff as I was growing up. And the outdoors were part of it, but not necessarily what drew me to it growing up so much. I really liked the social experiences while I was there. And then I wanted to do that professionally, work in camps. And so I found a school in North Carolina, just outside of Asheville, called Brevard College, that has a program called Wilderness Leadership and Experiential Education. So I went to college to get to do camp stuff outside. That was what my focus was going to be in. And then while I was doing that, we did a lot of backpacking and, you know, other kind of outdoor stuff, climbing and paddling. I'd only been backpacking for the first time. I got into it in high school. I started collecting the gear over a couple of years. And right after I graduated, my dad and I went to go. It was our first time backpacking, both of us. We went out and we did 30 miles in the Smokies over 3 days. And the first time I went out, I was really disappointed because I thought I was never going to want to do it again. I was 18 and we thought like, oh, you have all day, 10 miles should be no problem. And we, you know, we packed a ton of stuff and didn't really know what we were doing and struggled through it. But it wasn't too disheartening. I stuck with it and went to college and got to learn from professionals kind of, you know, the right ways to do it. And so got into it there and then ended up moving up to Washington State after college to go work at a camp there and got kind of my dream job as a program director at a year-round camp. And so was at the camp all year. We, you know, had a lot of snow. So we did snow sports in the winters and summer camp in the summers. And we did a few offsite trips. So I got to do some mountaineering up in the Cascades. That was really fun. A few kind of week-long trips with guests on the PCT. So got to get out and hike some while I was up there. And then just kind of had everything all in at the same time. I decided to leave that camp. And on the same day that I decided to leave, my next job fell through. I moved out of my house and I had a girlfriend break up with me. And so all in one day, just kind of all my responsibilities totally disappeared. And so I had nothing to do and was 25 and had plenty of money saved up. I was saving up to move to Seattle. And so I had money and time and no responsibilities or anything I owed anybody. So I set out and went to go hike the Appalachian Trail in 2018. And then pretty much since then, my life's just been all about through hiking. I fell in love with that. I loved that trail and getting to be kind of near home. The whole trail really felt like home, having grown up just outside the Smokies there. And then knew by the end of that, I wanted to keep doing this. And so hiked the Pacific Crest Trail in 2019. And then I had a great job just kind of falling in my lap, managing an outdoor store in Alabama that I started up at the very first week of March in 2020. And that ended up being a great time to hunker down and save up money for a while. And then, you know, throughout the COVID experience, I moved to a new town, so I didn't know anybody. It wasn't a great time to meet new people. I had lots of time to scheme and dream and kind of came up with this big idea to try to hike the most miles anyone's ever hiked in a calendar year before. And then that's what I set out to attempt last year.
Yeah, you know, I've interviewed a number of thru hikers, people that have hiked triple crowners, people have just hiked one or two of the trails, and it seems to be common that once you have done it, you kind of are bit and want to go back out and do more of it. It sounds like that's what happened with you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, even now, that's the main thing I want to do is find, you know, big cool hikes I want to go out and do. It's just I just can't get enough of it.
Yeah, and I guess it might be a little different with everyone. I know for me, I haven't through hiked any of the big trails, but I know when I've gone out on my 2 to 3 week backpacking trips, there's that feeling of, I like to say, liberation, freedom, real freedom. When you're out there, you know, everything's truly equal. You're just, you know, the people you meet are so nice. You're going through trail towns. Does that play into what kind of draws you into hiking, is into backpacking and now it's become a lifestyle for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best feeling I've ever experienced in my life was the first day when I was hiking on the Appalachian Trail. I had a cousin that did the approach trail with me. So got up to Springer, had an uncle pick him up and leave. And then when I set out from there, I had nowhere to be later in the year. I had no timeline. I just a totally open summer to figure out this hiking thing. And I just felt this like really extreme sense of freedom. And I think I've just been chasing that ever since I felt it the first time. But that's what I love about it. And then, you know, of course, plugging into the communities, I love the social component of all this stuff. That's ended up being one of the biggest factors in my big hike last year also. But it's just a perfect combination to me of socializing, meeting new interesting people, you know, both hikers and then in towns at the hostels and everything, trail angels, random people that maybe even haven't heard about the trail that are willing to offer you a ride into town. And then, you know, good chunks of solitude in between there being out on the trail. And so it's just, it's everything that's great about life, I think, just all rolled up into kind of one big experience.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. In 2017 and 18, I went on my first long backpacking trip. I did the Long Trail in Vermont. And I wrote about it. I'll make a shameless plug right now for my book, Switching Gears, available on Amazon. But it's just that, just that nature of feeling like you're living like a vagabond, just going from place to place, but no pressure to get there. And you're meeting sometimes new people on a daily basis. I mean, maybe that's not for everybody, but that's part of what I love about being out on the trail.
Totally. Yeah. And everyone has different things that they love about it. But I think one of the reasons I'm obsessed with it so much is that all of these different little factors all just line up perfectly with the kind of things that I'm interested in. So it hits me just right.
So let's move on now to 2022. You set out to just with a world record for the most miles hiked. Is that in a year or total?
In a calendar year. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So tell us about what motivated you to want to achieve that goal, to want to break that record?
Yeah, so a number of things. First of all, I was turning 30 at the end of last year. And so it seemed like a good time to do something, you know, big like that. And the majority of the time I'd spent with other people. I met other folks out there and hiked with them for a long time. And I loved that and being part of a trail family out there. But I also had times in between there where I would stay in town a little bit longer or leave to go visit family for a little while and then get back and be by myself and play catch up. And it was just a few weeks here and there over the course of my other hikes. But every time I did that, I loved that experience too, like really pushing myself. But I'd never done it for more than a few weeks at a time. And so as I'm kind of getting up to like the peak of my youth and before I start coming down the other end, I kind of wanted to try the most extreme thing I could in the hiking world, because I just love it. And I wanted to do something competitive and big within it. And I'm not a particularly fast hiker. So I knew that like fastest known times weren't really my kind of thing. But I felt pretty confident about my mental endurance and being able to be out there for a long time. I put up some big days before. I felt pretty good doing, you know, like multiple 35 mile days in a row in the past on the PCT. So I felt like I might have a shot at being able to do something big here. And I think one of the biggest factors in getting to do this is just a person that has the time and the money and the resources to put this together. And those are the three things I have going for me. So I wanted to give it a shot and kind of get my name out there as someone that had done something big in the hiking world, because I loved it so much and just, you know, want to forever be a part of it in some way. And so I knew I hadn't hiked the Continental Divide Trail yet, and I wanted to go out and do that. But kind of something that I realized, one of the other things that I really love about thru hiking that's most exciting to me, was the first and second time that I went out, I didn't know if I could do it. And I wanted to set up something that I genuinely didn't know if I would be able to do. So like the first time I hiked the Appalachian Trail, you know, I'd been out for a 3-week trip before and felt pretty good about that. But, you know, I was talking half of a year being out on trail. And so didn't know if I could. And then when I did it, feels awesome. And then going out west, it's a new environment. It's a longer trail. It's a tighter weather window. There's snow, all these other factors. So still wasn't sure I could do it going out, and then, you know, making sure like I didn't just get lucky the first time, and then went out and did that and felt good. So coming around to the third time, I wanted kind of that level of challenge with this next one. So I didn't want to just hike the Continental Divide Trail. I wanted to do something on a scale that I wasn't sure if I'd be able to or not. And so I read up on people that had done the Calendar Year Triple Crown and saw they kind of started around late February, early March, and finished in October and November, and wondered like, well, what else could you hike in a year? Because there's some other months on the ends of that that people aren't really using. And so I had also been interested in the Eastern Continental Trail and that route. And so that made sense. It seemed like to hike that kind of the prime season to hike through Florida is January, February. And so that lined up just right. So I'd get kind of a running start into the Appalachian Trail. And then just to add on the miles, I wanted to hike somewhere that would make sense to be hiking later in the year. And so having gone to school in North Carolina, I was interested in finishing my year hiking the mountains to Sea Trail that goes across that state. And then being back near family again during the holiday season, I maybe have some support as I was finishing up. And so that was the plan. And then so all of that, as well as I, you know, had a rough time during 2020, 2021, just the way things were going with the pandemic and the just kind of polarity that's happened all over the place. And so as much as anything, just getting to spend an entire year backpacking sounded awesome. No matter what else was tagged to it. And so as much as I wanted to go for this record and get to do this big thing, it also just kind of made it easy to explain to everybody what I was doing. And so instead of telling people like, this is what thru hiking is, this is why I'm interested in it, this is my history with it, this is what I'm trying to do this year, I can just tell people I'm out here trying to hike more miles than anyone's ever hiked. And in one sentence, I can get people excited about it. And you know, people often wanted to ask more and talk about it, and then I could explain, but it gave me a really easy way to communicate to other people something exciting that they could get behind without me having to explain, you know, this whole thru-hike culture and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're right. I think, yeah, you kind of explain it in layman's terms instead of giving a lesson on what thru-hiking is. I'm chasing a record. I'm not thru-hiking all these trails, which will lead to another question, another question, and another question.
Right.
Yeah. Now, but attempting something like this, now I've talked to, I interviewed, I think it was last year, it was a calendar year triple crowner. And this topic came up, trying to plan something like this with the different climates that you'll be going through and the different times of the year. Was that a big part of your pre-planning? Did you have to put a lot of thought into that on how you were going to approach it from that regard?
Yeah, I think it was a healthy mix of both for me. Having done hikes before, I know what it's like to plan things, and I know how flexible you have to be while you're out there, especially being out for so long. And so part of how I got my trail name, the professor, is being just a big logistics guy. I love doing the planning and making all the plans and everything. And so in 2021, I went through and mapped out the entire calendar year, day by day, of my daily mileage, places I thought that I might be at certain times. So I had my entire year mapped out to the day. And doing that, I never planned on sticking to it and pretty much threw it out the window within the first week. But it was good for me because I was trying to meet up with so many people to have a ballpark estimate of when I was going to be places. And then I put that together early in 2021. And then for the rest of the year, I could look at what the weather was doing in different parts of the country where I thought I'd be at certain times, just to kind of get a rough estimate of how, you know, where things would line up. And then I did as much research and read about other people that had done this. So Jeff Garmeyer, legend, is one of the guys that had written a book about this thing. And so I read his book like four times just to get an idea of where he was in all these places and could visualize where I was going to be and all this stuff. Because having hiked two of the trails, when I read through his account of what he'd done, I could pretty clearly visualize exactly where he was talking about the whole time. And I know that he's pretty fast and kind of a maniac out there. And so it seemed like there was plenty of time to go slower than he did, and still be able to put everything together. And so I did all my planning, didn't plan on sticking to it, and then just stayed as flexible as I possibly could. My first leg took a little bit longer than I was hoping to. And so I initially wanted to go all the way through on every trail, but I ended up, kind of doing a flip-flop of the PCT. So I finished the first leg in early June. And then instead of getting out to the desert in June and hiking, I skipped the 700 miles of the desert on the PCT and hopped on at Kennedy Meadows South and got into the Sierras, where most of the hikers were, if there were other people out there, and I could come back and do the desert later in the year.
Yeah, you mentioned Jeff Garmeyer. He's been on, we've had him on the show a couple of times. And
Oh, cool, awesome.
Yeah, really nice guy. And he has a movie coming out you might want to keep an eye out for called Free Outside.
Yeah, his fastest known time with the Colorado Trail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen the previews for that. I'm excited to see that when I get a chance to.
Yeah, and he's very inspiring and entertaining. Oh, yeah, totally. He's a fun person, right?
Yeah.
No, and that's a good person to be looking to and taking advice from, because that's a person with a lot of miles under his feet.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And again, I knew, I was pretty sure I wasn't the level of crazy that he was, because at that point, he'd also done all these FKTs and everything as I was going into last year. But he did it so fast and seemed to do it so smoothly. I figured, well, if he can do it like that easily, then I think I've got a chance at it.
Yeah. And I read in the Outside Magazine article that it was like the equivalent of doing a marathon a day and attempting this.
Yeah. So initially I was hoping to do 11,000 miles over the course of the year, which would have averaged 30 miles a day. So the hope with, and I like the way numbers line up too, it would have been 30 miles a day for my 30th year of life. And so that was part of how I put that together. The record that I could find was set by an Australian guy named Cam Honan or Swami that had hiked 10,244 miles the year before. And so I was shooting to way overshoot that, so I'd have plenty of room, and then adjusted my goal to being just past that. And then I ended up falling short of the goal. And by the time Halloween came around, my body was just too beat up. At that point, I needed to pick up the pace for the last 2 months, and it just wasn't going to happen. So I ended up slowing down and just finishing the Pacific Crest Trail so I could still claim calendar year Triple Crown. And with the extension that I did with Florida and then going a little bit north in Maine, I got to do a border-to-border hike too, which was cool. And I believe I'm the first person to do that in a calendar year.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't, because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors. Now, when I ask this, that because I always like to tell people, there's no such thing as a failed hike. I have two groups I'm following. This is something I've started doing. I bring a group of AT hikers on, a group of PCT hikers. And what I said to both groups in our last interview, because we have a group interview, is don't pressure yourself to, I mean, there should be some disappointment, but don't pressure yourself to where you're going to be injured or you're just not having fun. And it sounds like you saw that you weren't going to break the record, but you were going to do this border to border in a calendar year. Did that help motivate you to finish up? Because I also see, you know, you were dealing with some injuries along the way here as well.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So it was good to still have something to go for. Cause it was the first few days of November is when I put up a post online and announced that I was changing my plans. And it was tough, and it was such a mixed bag of, I didn't get to hit this goal I've been working towards for so long. I put almost 2 years of planning and hiking into it at that point. But then also I knew if I slowed down, I had a really good shot at least getting to do this calendar year Triple Crown, which I was really excited for. And so all the way through the end, and even now still I'm really back and forth on the emotions around that, of being like really excited and like, wow, I can't believe I was able to do this. And then also, you know, bummed that I wasn't able to hit my initial goal. And I think that's tough. And in some ways, in the long run, it's probably a better takeaway, you know, that I tried this huge thing and found some success, but not as much as I wanted. But that, you know, that kind of humbling situation that sets up is probably better for me than just knocking it out of the park and getting a huge ego.
Right. Yeah. And it leaves something on the table for you. And Carl, you've got to feel some sense of accomplishment to do what you did. I mean, you didn't break the record, but wow, that's a lot of miles in 1 year. And going from coast to coast, that's such an incredible feat. You've got to be feeling good about that.
Yeah, not a bad consolation prize, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm stoked for it. I got invited to go speak at Trail Days this year, so I get to go in and chat with people and be at, you know, the big AT gathering. So I'm excited for that, and excited that people are excited about it.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. Now, when you did this border to border, we all know about the three big trails, the Triple Crown. You mentioned the Florida Trail, but in doing this, you had an opportunity to experience some of these lesser known trails. And something I try to do in a podcast is I've had people on from some of the smaller trails, because I think that's an important thing to talk about as well, because You mentioned resources and time. And I like to tell people, well, you know, we don't all have the time or resources to go out and hike one of the big three, but there's a lot of smaller trails where you can go out there and hike. I believe, was it a trail in North Carolina that you hiked? What is it? The
Mountains to Sea Trail. And interestingly, just yesterday I saw on Instagram, they are partnering up with Far Out to get their map on, you know, the most popular app for through hikers. So I think that alone will probably get their name out there a little bit more too, because that's such a popular app. I mean, that, you know, most people that are out there doing the long trails are using that app. And so that's awesome to see that trail's on there too.
Yeah. And what were some of the other smaller trails you had an opportunity to hike across in this endeavor?
Yeah. So there, you know, there's some road walks here and there. I did a couple hundred miles through the Keys in Florida, and then a couple hundred miles on the roads in Alabama to connect the Florida Trail and the Pinhoti Trail. So those are the two other non-Triple Crowns that I got to do. And those were great. I loved doing those. The Florida Trail was just so unique and quirky for a trail. As someone that, you know, had done a few through X before, I had a good basis to compare it to. And it's totally its own beast. It's a cool, different mix of challenges, to where it's, you know, it's totally flat the whole time. So that's cool. And it felt like it meant I could go farther and faster, but it definitely took a toll on my body just in ways that I wasn't used to. And so it wasn't necessarily super easy because of that. And then, you know, there's a few miles of swamp walking that you do. You got wet feet to deal with. You got a couple long stretches of roads where you're calling up churches to make sure you can camp in their yards. It's interesting. It was really cool. Totally different wildlife. I think the coolest thing about that one is the season to hike it is great. I mean, it's like, you know, maybe starting as early as sometime in December through like February or maybe March. And so there's not a ton you can hike in this country in that kind of shoulder season, but you know, everybody's got different jobs. You can take off different chunks of time and everything. You could take off and be, you know, head out right after Christmas and get to go tackle this thing, which is really cool. And then the Pinhoti Trail was also great. The community there is growing. And on both of these trails, the community is growing, and the numbers of through hikers that are attempting it every year is shooting up as well. The Pinhoti Trail was awesome. The Appalachian Trail is notoriously difficult, and I think it's the physically most difficult of the three. But the Pinhoti was great because it feels like the Appalachian Trail, but the difficulty level is not there. It's a lot more gentle for the most part. There's a couple of sections that are a little dicey, but it, you know, it has the feel of the Appalachian Trail with a lower difficulty level. And then there's still shelters in there. It's easy enough to get into the communities to get your resupplies and everything. So I was a big fan of getting to do both of those.
I've heard a lot of good things about the Pinhoti Trail. And it's on my radar list, on my bucket list, a little bit further down. I got a bunch of other things I want to do first, but I've heard good things about it. And the Florida Trail seems to really be growing in popularity. I've noticed there seems every year more and more people are getting out there. And I think it's for the reason you mentioned. It gives people that winter opportunity to hike. And it is a different experience. People think, hey, you know, it's Florida, it's flat. You've got other challenges out there. And you mentioned hiking through the swamps. What was that like for you?
Yeah, so there were two main sections that I went through. Right there at the start, you know, like maybe 20 miles in, you're in a swamp for about 8 miles or so. And then up north too in Bradwell Bay, there's another 7 or so miles. So it was about 15 total miles of the 1,200 I was in Florida were in swamp. So not as many as I thought that there might be, which is nice. And the first one I went through, you know, I was just excited to have some blazes to follow again after coming up the road walk there through the Keys and everything being on pavement. So I was excited that my feet were on something a little softer, even if it was wet. And the everything was growing so close together there. I at least told myself I didn't think gators would be swimming in there. It seemed too tight. And I was just kind of blissfully ignorant about that. I didn't see any. I told myself that I wouldn't, and it was fine. I mean, you know, it's made to hike, so it's not like this is a crazy dangerous thing if people are doing this with some regularity. And it was slow going. It was tough. It was, you know, not doing too much more than a mile an hour, just slogging through this, stopping to dump sand out of my shoes every now and then. And yeah, just like a totally different challenge, having a backpack on and being backpacking, but doing something physically that's so different than anything that I was used to. And then up as I got up north to the other one, that one was even more adventurous than the first. It was kind of messy. I think there maybe been like a hurricane or something that had come through and blown trees down. And so that one was really blaze to blaze. You kind of pick your way through and get to one orange blaze and then look left and right and try to see where the next one was and then kind of work your way to that one. So that one was pretty adventurous. And I ended up kind of chasing or racing the sunset that day to try to get out of there before it got too dark, and ended up being okay, but it made it a little bit extra tense.
Yeah, the wildlife in Florida. My wife, she likes Florida. She likes the winters down there. Who doesn't? And she says, well, you know, you hike up. I live in the Northeast. There's bears up here. You know, gators, I'm going to be honest with you, that scares me a little bit. And I'm listening to you, and I'm like, yeah, I'd be thinking to myself, yeah, what do I know about gators? And I'm walking through this, and you know, can you see what you're looking at? And then there's all the different types of snakes down there. That's kind of what would go through my mind down there. Did you find yourself doing that? That, you know, thinking and going through your mind? I know you talked about the gators, but all the different wildlife that you could possibly come across.
Yeah, definitely. That I think of the entire year that was going into it, I think that and worrying about getting through Colorado before winter were the two things I was the most afraid of going into this year, of hiking in the land of like actual dinosaurs or the alligators that are all over the place down there. And then I heard there's this like Burmese python epidemic where these giant snakes are loose all over the place and there's people that are out there bounty hunting them. So it sounds like pretty intimidating. And I think my total snake count for 1200 miles was less than 10. And so I don't know if that was lucky or if I wasn't looking very well or what that was. But maybe that's the season. They're not as active also, even though it's not super cold. It's cold for Florida. The longer I was out there and didn't see much, the better I felt about it. But I was definitely pretty nervous going into it, for sure. And there's a lot of other stuff. I was surprised. I came across bears a couple times when I was in Florida. I didn't know there were bears there. I think that I saw a panther at night, one of the elusive Florida panthers. And then also, I didn't see them. And multiple people asked about this. And I thought they were joking, but enough people asked. And then I looked it up that there are indeed wild monkeys that are in Florida from when they filmed, a Tarzan movie in like the 60s or 70s. And the monkeys got loose. And then they ended up just thriving in that environment. And so now there's some sections you hike through. If you listen, you can hear wild monkeys that are out there. And so Florida really, really does have it all.
Oh, and yeah, it's just a totally different experience being down in that part of the country to hike. And I guess I've talked to people that have hiked down there in the different parts of the country. It's like, don't think you're going there and having a cakewalk hike. It's a different experience and throwing different challenges at you, both mentally and physically.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think with that one, expectations are really important. The only people I met that were out there that weren't having a good time were people that were upset they were on roads so often, which there is a fair amount of road walking that's there. But, you know, it's got its advantages and disadvantages. You don't have to carry as much food when you're doing that. You can pop in and have a hot or cold beverage or bite to eat throughout the day. But if your expectations are that you're going to be on the roads a lot, a decent amount of time, and it's going to be challenging, I think it's a great time.
Now, on the subject of food, how did you go about keeping yourself fortified here? Did you do resupply boxes? Did you just plan on, you know, part of your pre-planning is determining where you'd be able to stop and pick up food items, where the Dollar Generals were and the supermarkets? How'd you go about that?
Yeah, so this is where it really helped to have hiked a couple of these trails before. Because you hear such mixed things about them, especially the Pacific Crest Trail. Like I'd read a lot of things that said like you have to send a box to these places. There are no options. And my first time going through, I found that like I'm okay to eat kind of whatever's available. And I'd never had any issues being able to resupply at like gas stations or hitch a little bit further out to get what I needed. And so I wanted to avoid boxes as often as possible because I'd also seen other people around me that were doing boxes just have such a headache with trying to line up, getting into the post offices at the right time. With a lot of these small places where you'd want to send a box are the places that have the quirkiest hours at their post offices. So I tried to avoid that as much as possible. And then looking into it, even buying in bulk, it wasn't necessarily any cheaper than just going to the grocery store and buying whatever, even, you know, buying stuff on the East Coast in bulk and then going out and buying stuff at California prices. It was still, for what I had found, it was still cheaper to just get stuff on the go. But I did, you know, I had to go through a fair number of pairs of shoes last year. And so I bought some stuff in bulk because I figured if I was going to send myself shoes, I may as well put some food in there too. It's like, you know, that shipping cost is already covered because I paid for it for the shoes. So if I get food, you know, it's free shipping or however you want to think about it. So I sent myself a few boxes, and just to get something a little bit more consistent. And I had some good meals. I got to partner with a girl that was just getting started out making meals in the Knoxville area. So that was cool to have like a locally owned business that was helping me out with my trip. And so I got some Alt Route Meals. That is the name of the company that she's making. And she took off last year. She was starting to sell them at like Neal's Gap and in a bunch of REIs and stuff throughout Tennessee. And so she was doing great. And so I had these great meals I was getting in some of these boxes, which was nice to break up the kind of monotony. But I actually didn't get too tired of my ramen and potatoes. That I'm a big ramen bomb guy, and I never really got too tired of them. But it was nice to have something a little bit healthier. Her stuff is good, like clean food that's quick and easy to make. So it was nice to kind of break that up a little bit. But I ended up meeting up with people really often. Both like friends and family, even just like really obscure, like maybe high school classmates I hadn't talked to in, 10 or 15 years would reach out when I get to their corner of the country and offer to help out. And then because of that, the first leg of the journey, so from Key West to Canada, that took 158 days, I was meeting up with people so often that I spent more nights indoors than outdoors through that first leg of the trip. And so, you know, this is also going into hostels and stuff from time to time, especially when there was going to be bad weather and I could line up to get into a town. But from that, I was in town eating like good meals at restaurants a lot, eating home cooked food a good number of nights. And so I kind of just looked at it as like just a sort of longer cycle than 24 hours. It was more like maybe 72 hours that I'd kind of get by on trail and then get into town and bulk up between dinner and breakfast and then get back out and kind of ride the wave of calorie deficiency and overload.
So you are carrying a lot of food at any single time. I should maybe look at it this way. For a lot of that leg of the trip, at least, you probably didn't have to carry a lot of food for long stretches.
Yeah, and that was a huge benefit too. That's the nice thing about, you know, putting in bigger mile days, especially on the Appalachian Trail where you got so many options to go into towns, is it was pretty rare for me to carry more than maybe 2.5 days of food. And a lot of the time it was just a single day. And there were plenty of times where I said goodbye to one person that put me up for the night and then hiked all day and met up with the next person. And so for that, I've just got snacks. And so that was a tremendous help. I wasn't intentionally supported, but I got so much support last year.
Right. And then there's areas, I'm sure, where you need to stock up and have 4 or 5 or more days worth of food. What were the most days worth of food you had to carry with you on this journey?
Yeah, my longest stretch was going through the Sierras on the PCT. So that I think was mentally one of the toughest parts of the year. I actually took off a little over a week after I finished up the AT. My body was just so beat up and I decided to skip the desert anyway. And so I gave a little bit more time for the snow to melt and hung out by the pool at my aunt and uncle's house and ate a pint of Ben and Jerry's every day and kind of stocked up a bit and then got out and started at, you know, mile marker 702 or whatever it is up there and had 7 days of food and my bear cam. And so I went to go restart after taking time off and had my heaviest pack of the year with my bear can going into, you know, the place where I'm furthest from cell service the whole time on a brand new trail. And so that was mentally tough to get up for it and get back out there at it. But other than that, I did 5 days, maybe once or twice. But on average, it was even on the other trails, I was hitting three and a half days, even through some of the longer stretches.
How'd your gear hold up with all this? Do you have any like major gear failures or switching out gear? I mean, because you had done a lot of backpacking before this, so you knew what you needed gear wise, but this is the most backpacking you had done obviously in a single year. How did that work out?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, and I'm a huge gearhead. I love gear. I like it. That's what that got me into backpacking at first when I was 16, which is seeing all the little trinkets and like stoves and all kind of cool stuff you could take out there. So that's what attracted me to backpacking initially. And I got really fortunate after my first hike. I got an in with the Trek and got to do some writing for them and got into doing gear reviews. So I've been doing gear reviews for about 3 years by the time I set out to do this trip, which meant I've been able to stockpile a bunch of stuff. And so I had plenty of backups and everything, and I was able to line it up. So I didn't have any like major failures on trail. I had a pad that started to get a pretty slow leak after the first 5 months. It was still fine to sleep on. It'd just be a little low by the time I woke up in the morning. And then I had time to reset and get a new pad. I had the tips on my trekking poles both wore out. I went through about three pairs of trekking poles over the year. I had one pair I started out with and they kind of broke down. And then when I was with a buddy, he gave me his old trekking poles that already had quite a few miles on them. So I didn't fully get a new pair. I had someone offer me another one. And then after that, I did get a brand new pair that lasted the rest of the year. So poles went through, my packs held up totally fine. Never had any holes in any. My tent did great. I had, and I used a couple different packs over the course of the year. The main two that I used, I had a ULA Ohm 2.0 that I had when I had like my winter gear and some heavier stuff. And then I had a Light AF 30 liter pack for my summer kit. And both of those held up great. And then my tent for the majority of the year was Z-Pax Altiplex. So I had a nice light tent, but even the Dyneema stuff held up just fine. And my first pad, I had a Nemo Tensor long wide insulated going through the AT when it was a little bit colder. And then I switched to just a Therm-a-Rest NeoAir X-Lite. And yeah, I can get into all the gear stuff, but the takeaway is the gear held up great. I made a few switches when I needed to. But I was able to wait until, you know, I was able to like come home in between trails or wait for my sister was my gear coordinator last year. She sent me everything when I needed it. And so I never really had to buy anything new on trail at all. It lasted long enough to at least get to the next town.
So you mentioned, yeah, you would go home, you would had it set up. So I guess in between those switching of, you know, changing of the seasons, you had your sister that would help you. You'd go home and use switch out from one season to the next. You kind of had it planned that you would that way so that you could switch out your gear to change the seasons. Is that how you went about this?
Yeah, exactly. So I had a gear closet with everything laid out and everything labeled. And I talked with my sister about, I think this is where, when I'm going to need this, and this is where this is. And this kind of stuff is in this box and this stuff's in that box. And so it was really easy to coordinate. And most of the time when I was calling her to do that, I was somewhere in town where I had service. We could FaceTime and she could show me the exact thing. So I was making sure I was getting exactly what I needed. And then that all lined up really well.
Now, Carl, when we say as backpackers, we have a gear closet, because I do. Do we have a backpacking problem or a hiking problem?
That's our hobby, you know?
That's right. Yep. No, I take some ribbing from my wife about that. But yeah, I've got a whole closet where I keep my hiking and backpacking stuff.
Yeah, I know. My sister let me commandeer one of her closets for the year, and I'm working on moving out now because I take up the full thing.
You were dealing with an injury. I mentioned this earlier when I was reading the article. Tell us a little bit about that. Was that a result of overusage, being out there too long, or was this a lingering injury you went out there with?
Yeah, it was an overuse thing. And I think had to do with my transition of flat to mountains. It started creeping up in Damascus. So about almost 500 miles into the Appalachian Trail. And I started dealing with what I believe, I'm pretty confident, is Achilles tendonitis. And the backs of my heels were just in quite a bit of pain. And I tried everything I could, knowing from everything I heard. I went to a doctor for something else and asked about this while I was there. It seemed like the best thing I could do for it was to take a few weeks off. Didn't really have that in the cards. And so just kind of took a questionable amount of ibuprofen and pushed on through for most of the year. And that was part of the reason that I took off 10 days in between finishing the AT before I headed out west to get onto the PCT. So I hoped that having some extra time off would give that a little bit of time to heal. And it ended up not too much. I got back out and flared back up right away. But it never really got too much worse. It's kind of like it just all of a sudden was there and I was dealing with this pain, but it didn't really affect my ability to walk. It definitely slowed me down. And so my maximum pace dropped for sure, which meant to keep up with the miles I wanted to do, I was doing longer days, but you know, not necessarily walking any faster. And so it was just kind of pain management for almost 9 months out of the year to be able to get through that. And I kept waiting for it to affect me and for me to, feel like I couldn't keep walking. And it felt like I could, and it was just pain that I was dealing with. And so I just kind of pushed through it and took pain medication when I felt like I needed it and it was all right, and went through different cycles of taking it every day for a while and then trying to wean off of it a little bit and kind of going back and forth.
Yeah, so there was no like incident where you twisted your leg or slipped or something. This just felt like it was just built up, and or just one day you said it was just you felt it and felt the pain, and you were just dealing with it for the rest of your adventure.
Yeah, right. So I a few days before I felt it, I did like a 40 mile day on the AT, which I've been doing closer to like 25 for the most part. Those mountains are tough. So I busted out this big day, and it was a couple of days after that I started feeling this. So I think it's just overuse, just too much climbing in the mountains for too long and not getting enough rest in between. And I had one little spill when I was on the Continental Divide Trail. I fell and landed on my hip, and I had a little bit of trouble, or it was sore walking, and I felt like I needed to sit that out. But I sat that out for 2.5 days, and it was 100% gone after that. So that was my only like fall that led to anything. But then other than that, yeah, just overuse in my heels, and then, definitely feeling the effects of walking so many miles every day elsewhere. But that was the biggest one.
And I've heard a number of people say that AT is physically might be the toughest of the three, because you look at it, it's just like almost like they just said, all right, the shortest point is from point A to point B, and you're just going to hike straight up that mountain and straight down. I got to hike out west for the first time this year, and even though those mountains were higher and they had other challenges, you didn't feel that elevation the way you do hiking through the AT. Most of my hiking's been in the Northeast.
Right. Yeah, I know. I haven't done the long trail yet. It's really high up on my list. I've heard only that it's like harder than the hardest parts of the AT. So I know that what that's like. And then going out west, it is a totally different ballgame. I mean, I noticed right away too, going from, because I finished up the AT and then right away jumped into the Sierra, which is supposed to be one of the hardest parts of the PCT. And even so, even with my heaviest food carry of the year, it was night and day difference how much easier it was to go out there where the trail is just so much nicer to you versus all the scrambling on the rocks in the Northeast.
When I was in the northern part of Vermont, I had come across two people who had through hiked the AT in previous years, and they said it rivaled New Hampshire going through the Whites, the northern part of Vermont.
Yeah, that's what I've heard unanimously from everyone, so I believe it. So I'm sure if you've done that, then you get it.
Yeah. And then going out this year, I hiked in the Tahoe Rim Trail, and I'm looking at these elevations and I'm thinking, wow, that's a lot. 9,000 feet. Wow. And like the first big elevation was going up to Dick's Pass. And I remember thinking, okay, it was a lot of uphill hiking, but with the switchbacks, I felt like it was easier than much lower elevations I've done out here in the Northeast.
Yeah, definitely. And you feel it so differently. Having hiked the Appalachian Trail as my first through hike, and then the Pacific Crest Trail, I averaged more miles on my second through hike, and I'm thinking like, oh, that's just because I'm a better hiker now. So I came back to hike the Appalachian Trail again and was expecting it to be like a lot easier than last time, and it was way harder than I remembered. And it definitely humbled me getting back out there. Having done my most recent hiking out west, coming back out east it's a beast.
Yeah, there's no switchbacks on the Appalachian Trail for people that live on the West Coast or in the mountain areas in Colorado. There's no switchbacks. It's a lot of times you feel like going straight up and straight down those mountains, especially in New Hampshire.
Yeah, it's mean. And it felt, another thing I was feeling by the end of the AT was my knees from all the downhills that were feeling really beat up. And it was a daily thing I'd feel for a good chunk of it and had to really go slow coming down. But then I got out west and even the downhills, the angle was gentler enough that I stopped feeling it as soon as I got out west. It's like just steep enough that my body chemistry at least responded to it totally differently than somewhere else.
Yeah. No, I noticed a big difference. Definitely. I don't like to use the word easier, but my body didn't feel as beat up as it did in Northern Vermont or on some sections of the Appalachian Trail. You went through three different parts of the country, getting off trail and going into towns, and food must have been different from one area to the other. But was there a food you were craving, like consistently when you got off the trail, or did that kind of depend on where you were at or what your mood was?
Yeah, I got so spoiled on the first leg of the trip. I mean, I was eating home-cooked meals fairly often, eating, you know, like home-cooked salmon and like big pots of chili. And there's a woman I stayed with that was just a total stranger that reached out through social media. That ended up putting me and a buddy of mine up for three nights, took us to trail every day, brought us home at the end of the day. And she really underplayed that she was a European trained cook and just made these fantastic dinners and then packed up sandwiches in the morning for us to go. It was great. So I had such a great variety in the beginning. I didn't have too much cravings. The only thing that I kind of maybe adapted to craving was if I was going into town, I had my sights set on just like a burger and fries, just knowing that like anywhere that I go is definitely going to have this. So I'd never be disappointed by it. The one area where that changed was going through New Mexico. I learned pretty quickly on that, like that's top tier Mexican food. All these towns had fantastic Mexican restaurants I could pop into and get some really good stuff. So for the most of the year, it was just burger and fries or, you know, maybe pizza sometimes. Though I got close to getting burned out on pizza. But New Mexico, the Mexican food was top notch. That was awesome.
Yeah, I know the first time I did a long hike, I was out for 5 or 6 days. It was my first stretch of the hike of the trip. And I remember going into town and I didn't know what I wanted. I know I just wanted something that wasn't out of a bag you just add hot water to it. I ended up stopping at a Taco Bell. I don't particularly care for fast food, but that was the best fast food I ever ate, I think.
Yeah.
Taco Bell never tasted so good.
Yeah. And Taco Bell especially is probably it's my favorite fast food place in normal life, but whenever I could get it on trail, I would, because it was normally like it felt like at least the best bang for my buck. And I knew it was getting protein at least in from their bean goop.
How about the towns you went through? Do you have any towns that stand out as being exceptionally friendly or that you'd want to go back and visit?
I'd say probably most of them. I had just so many excellent experiences in all these places, and was staying with people so often, you know, meeting locals and getting to stay at people's homes. A lot of the places I'd been through before, I went back through and had another great time, just kind of as I had before. And it was fun getting to revisit towns. Probably my favorite overall, is just AT towns in general of the three that they just, you know, have been doing it the longest and have the most pride in their trail angeling and relationships with hikers. I had a string of towns in Virginia that were really nice. And then I had a good time too when I crossed out of Vermont into New Hampshire. And walking there, you know, being on the college campus there at Dartmouth, that was just that was a neat vibe. And I was there, I guess it was late spring. School was definitely still in session, So I was waiting to cross the road, you know, where the they've got the white blazes on like the lampposts and everything, in this big gaggle of college kids. So that, you know, that's a fun little experience to be like on my hike, doing my through hike thing, and just to be in the middle of these people's day at school.
Being on all these different trails, you had mentioned the Florida Trail, that trail culture starting to develop there, the Pony Trail. And we know that this, you know, as we call it, the trail culture, the pride, the people taking the towns of the hikers going through and accommodating them. Is this something that you're seeing spreading to these other trails now?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like when I started the Florida Trail, I had a friend from that I actually met through the store that I worked at in Alabama that is on one of the boards, maybe like Alda East, I think. His trail name's Shep, and he's just out. He's like a professional trail angel, basically. And he was there for the Florida Trail kickoff, this event that they've started having. I don't know how long they've been doing it. But he said, I think they'd hosted maybe like 40 or so people that were all starting the trail within a few days of each other. And they were really excited about that. Whereas like the last few years, or maybe 5 or 10 people that had been attempting it, and they had a big bubble of about 40 people that all started together. And then I got to meet, when I got to the Pinhoti Trail, Nathan that works there at the Pinhoti Outdoor Center, that's, maybe 20 miles into that trail and runs this hostel. And I got there in, early mid February, and the place was totally booked because all these people were there starting out. And he was talking about how they're having to grow their operation and have more places to park, and all this exciting stuff for them of all these people coming through and doing the Pinhoti Trail. And I felt really fortunate to get to meet people that were part of these communities and get to chat with them and just, you know, see the excitement in their eyes and talk about how it's changed even in just the last few years. From a combination of things, it's like a perfect storm of the impact that social media has had on hiking, where it's all over the place, watching hikers on YouTube and Instagram and TikTok and all this stuff that you can see this, there's more awareness that this exists, I think. And then also I think just the post pandemic era where people wanting to get outside more and wanting to do something crazy more and all that kind of stuff, that all of these pieces together have just made it so people want to go out and do this. And it's great. And it's especially great when people are getting on kind of these lesser known trails, because the big three are getting real close to and already having issues with overcrowding. And so the more people are going out and doing these other hikes, smaller ones, the better it is for everybody. And so there's all kinds of great things you can do that aren't the big flashy Triple Crown. And so the more awareness that gets out of the smaller one, and the more cool those are looking to people, I think better for the whole community.
And you mentioned that the Florida Trail isn't exactly a small trail. What is that, 1,100 or 1,200 miles?
Yeah. Somewhere in there, depending on what route you take. But it's a good, I mean, yeah, it's months of hiking on its own.
Right. It's not a short hike. And right, those other three get all the attention. And that's why, you know, I've tried to bring people on, and I've talked about these other lesser known trails. Some of them aren't shorter trails. The Arizona Trail is another one that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. I think that's 800 or 900 miles.
Yeah. I think right around 800. And right. Again, that's probably a couple months for folks.
Right. So yeah, it's great, because I think, you know, it's a combination of things. I think it's, you know, we're coming out of the pandemic, people wanting to be outside, and I think these people that live in the communities take a lot of pride in saying, hey, you know, look, we have a beautiful town too. It's not just on the Appalachian Trail, but here in Florida we have beautiful towns where we are nice and friendly to people. And I think it's great that that's spreading, which leads me to my next question. You talked about home cooked meals and accommodated. When you're out there doing this, we're living in a time when there's just so much tension between people. And when you're out there, did it seem to feel erased when you were seeing the goodness in people?
Yeah. And that's another one of the, and a little bit what I talked about earlier with wanting to get out and kind of get away from all this tension and stuff that's going on in this country, especially. In my past hikes, I've left feeling like, oh, people are great. And then, you know, couple of years after in the middle of COVID and everything, wanted to see like, oh, I wonder how this has affected things now getting back out here. And in my experience, it didn't seem to really affect much at all. I had exclusively positive interactions with people. And my personal belief is that when you are face to face with another human being and looking them in their eyes, most people want to be good and to be kind and to spread that. I think it's when we're behind screens that it's so easy for people to get upset and kind of group people into something that they believe and imagine that this person represents all of the things that they dislike. But when you're actually face to face with people and someone's doing a thing, you know, who cares what they believe? They're out doing something exciting with their lives and people want to help. And I recognize too that it's, I think I definitely have some privilege within this as getting to be, a white guy out here doing this stuff, as I don't have to have as many fears as other people might have to. But at least in my experience, everybody was nothing but kind and positive and excited about what I was doing and wanted to lend a hand. And this is people with all sorts of backgrounds and beliefs too. I mean, there are a couple times when I'm out hitchhiking, I see a car drive by with a bunch of stickers all over the back window that kind of scared me a little bit. And then that car would pull over and the person driving it was totally kind. And I don't know, totally what it is, but just seeing somebody doing something that they admired, there were people that believe all sorts of things that respect and appreciate that and wanted to contribute and help out with what I was doing. And so I left the whole thing feeling like, oh yeah, people are pretty good.
And that seems to be a common sentiment, and it is with me, that you kind of have a restored hope in that, you know what, we are good. We can get along. And we don't have to let our differences of opinion or beliefs affect who we are or who we befriend or who we're kind to.
Yeah, absolutely. And it felt so good for an entire year just to have those experiences over and over and over again. It really makes it feel like, you know, this is a good chunk of people, and this is what people as a whole are kind of like.
Right. People behaving the way we should be.
Yeah.
Right? We should be kind. If we see somebody walking along the road, ask them if they need a ride.
Yeah. And I had that, you know, even in Florida and Alabama, some of these places where I'm just on a road and there wasn't an established trail, people pulling over asking if I need help, what are you doing, are you okay, kind of stuff. But yeah, all over the country, I got to hike across 24 states last year, and you know, nothing but positive interactions with people the whole time.
Anybody listening is wondering if they should go out and start backpacking, that's a good reason in itself just to get out there and see that there's still so much goodness in the world.
Yeah, totally. That and that, so many components of this experience, you know, being outside all day, being physically active every day. My mental health is just always at its best when I'm in the middle of doing this. And there, just everything contributes to that. My interactions with people, like we've talked about. But then, yeah, just being outside so much of the time, being in the sun and even in the rain, and being physically active, being so tired at the end of the day because I put in a hard day's work. It just, everything clicks when I'm out there. And I think most people tend to experience that.
Now, Carl, are you still writing for the Trek?
Yeah, I am. I'm working right now on a reflection article of last year.
So we can follow you on the Trek. We can look for your articles on there. I know I've read a few of them, and very enjoyable, by the way.
Awesome. Yeah, I've got my plenty of gear reviews, and then a couple things that are more interesting for people that aren't so stoked about gear stuff. So one of my things, another part of my professor thing, is that I keep pretty tight statistics on everything I do when I'm on trail. And so as many different things as I can count, I do every day and write them down in my paper journal. And then for all my hikes, I write up this big analysis of my hike. Like everything from, you know, my step count per day, my miles per day, to like the liters of water I drink every day, the amount of times I pee every day. All this stuff is all written up and then broken down. And so like I can pair data. So like on the Appalachian Trail, I like broke it down by state and said, like, by state, it took this many steps to hike a mile on average across the 14 states that the Appalachian Trail goes through. And by that metric, at least for me, this state was the most difficult because it took the most steps to hike a mile. And then like for the PCT, like this is where I drank the most water per mile. And this is where I was like peeing the most per mile and all kinds of different stuff just to look at the numbers. So I've got that stuff too. And I'm working on those write-ups for the Trek as well on all my data from last year, all this stuff. My animal counts, how many times I saw different animals. And maybe my favorite is my free beer counts over the course of all these hikes. And for last year, I got up to 156 on the year.
Nice.
So almost a free beer every other day for a year.
Nice. I could settle into that lifestyle, a free beer every day, every other day.
Yeah, right. It basically pays for itself.
That's right. You brought up animal encounters. I have to ask this. It wouldn't be the Papa Bear Hikes podcast, and my listeners would be disappointed if I didn't ask you. Did you have any scary or sketchy animal encounters while you were out there?
I did a little bit, nothing too crazy. I saw my fair share of bears while I was out. I am at least 80% sure I saw two grizzly bears when I was going through Montana. Both times I only saw the backs of them because they were running the other direction when they heard me coming, but they were just so wide. I was pretty sure this is the big guy. And when I was camping in Glacier, you know, one of the big grizzly areas up in northern Montana, I woke up. I had my tent was shaking, and that's what woke me up in the morning. And I got up and it was before dark, and so it wasn't any people or anything. I knew it was some kind of animal, and I was pretty worried. I'm in grizzly country. I've got my bear spray right next to me at least, but there's something here. And I opened up my vestibule and looked out, and there's a fox that was trying to get in my tent. So I was able to pull out my camera and got this great video of this fox that was really close by. And I wasn't too worried. I mean, it's about the size of a house cat. And I had my second trekking pole right there as a bludgeon if I needed something, but it was just a curious little fox that was coming in. So started out scary, ended up being totally fine. And then the other time, I'm pretty sure, probably at least 75% sure, I saw a large panther at night when I was walking through in Florida. So a really big cat that I saw in the distance. I saw its eyes. I saw a long tail behind it. So it wasn't a cow. It wasn't a deer. And I made as much noise as I could, and it pounced and went the other direction. But I think I stared down a pretty big cat at one point.
Those big cats are pretty intimidating, right?
Yeah.
You hear a lot. Yeah, most people say most bear encounters, like you said, you see them running, right? They hear us totally. And they take off.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my experience with bears. I had the cat I was a little more worried about. And then one other quirky Florida animal encounter. I went through kind of a cold snap when I got up. So I was coming north, I think when I was coming through the panhandle. And they had it was cold enough, they had a frozen iguana warning, which is, when it's cold enough down there that the iguanas will get too cold and freeze and fall out of the trees onto people. So I didn't get snow in Florida, but I did get the frozen iguana warning.
You got iguana. You were, oh, there was an iguana snow, iguana warning. You might get iguana dropped on.
Yeah, right. So that's what was going on in the news. And it was mostly just comical for me. I ended up not seeing it happen. But it was that was another thing to look out for of the quirky experience you might have on the Florida trail.
Well, Carl, you talked about your continuing your work with the trek, but backpacking wise, hiking wise, what do you have coming up? Anything planned for 2023?
Yeah, I think I've got a friend that wants to do a 2-week hike somewhere in the Southeast. I'm not totally sure what that is. Maybe the Sheltowee Trace Trail I might be looking at kind of in the middle of the spring. And then I might do something also in the fall, potentially the Long Trail or maybe the Arizona Trail I might get out and do this year. So just doing a couple of those things this year, just kind of as I'm patching things up, trying to put a career together as a freelance writer and backpacker and getting to live the dream and get paid to do this kind of stuff. The next long hike that really interests me is the Te Araroa in New Zealand, of getting to hike 1,800 miles through Lord of the Rings country.
One of my kids brought that one up to me.
Yeah, that one sounds really cool. And I know whatever I do next, I want to go at a slower pace and do shorter days and start and end my days while it's still light outside. I have to spend a ton of time walking in the dark and get to hang out in towns as much as I want and get to really soak it all in next time. So whatever's next is a little bit slower. And then we'll see if maybe there's another big mile push later in my hiking career.
So Carl Stanfield, where can we find you if we want to follow you?
Yeah. So you can look my name up at the Trek for some of my articles there. And then my My only social media presence right now is on Instagram, and that's prof_Carl. So it's prof_Carl.
Carl Stanfield, aka the professor, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your experience with us and your stories. And we look forward to hearing from you in the future with some of your upcoming adventures.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a pleasure. And one of my favorite things about this last year was all the people I've gotten to meet in all these different corners of the backpacking community. So I'm stoked to get to make a connection with you here.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so yet, go to our website, papabearhikes.com. Listen to past episodes. Check us out on social media. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. All those links are there. In addition to that, you can buy our book or see what you're missing out on if you're not a Patreon member yet. Remember to get outside, have fun, and be safe. This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.